Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Curran, and Gary Spain. Coming up on this week's podcast, we're in Europe again as we look at some famous nights of Irish clubs in Europe. But this time around, we're looking at Irish clubs in the Cup Winners' Cup, a competition that no longer exists, but which League of Ireland clubs have a long history with. Don't forget to share the show on your own social media channels to let people find out more about the history and heritage of Irish football. Turn on your notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so you can get notified straight away when a new episode drops. And Gary, on this historic week for Irish football, as we record this podcast, there's two Irish teams, incredibly, for the first time ever, playing in Europe. So we're going to talk about Europe again and the history of Irish clubs in it. But this time we're talking about the European Cup Winners' Cup, which some people out there might not remember because it's not been around for a while. But I suppose let's start off, first of all, explain to us about the Cup Winners' Cup. What was it?
Yeah, so you say it's not been around, and I need to pause for a second and realize it's 26 years since it's been around. So yeah. I appreciate there are people listening to this who weren't even born the last time. But it's something I grew up with. It became the secondary UEFA competition. So obviously, back in the day, we had the European Cup that started in 1955. That's for the back in the day, it was for the champions and the holders. It's obviously expanded with the Champions League. But the European Cup Winners' Cup was the secondary competition. And it was exactly as they say on the tin. To qualify for it, you had to win your national cup competition. And the only exceptions in those days were if you were runners up. So if the champions did the double and you were the runners up, you got into the Cup Winners' Cup, and also the holders got in. Now, having said all of that, I will go on and talk about how Limerick got in 1965, which was slightly different. But in general and officially, they were the rules that you had to either win your national cup competition, you had to lose in the cup final to the champions, or you had to be the holders of the Cup Winners' Cup, who automatically got a spot, unless, of course, they also won their league and were playing in the European Cup.
Yeah, back when the name champions was on the cup, and you were actually the champions, get into the competition. But I suppose let's go back in chronological order. You've picked out a few matches throughout the decades as well, and you've started off with Shelburne against Barcelona.
Yeah, well, let me go back to the very start and give a little bit of the history.
Yeah, go ahead.
The competition started in 1960 for the 60-61 UEFA season. Now, at the time, it wasn't officially recognised. It came out of an old competition called the Metropa Cup, which was mainly for Central European sides. None of our clubs ever played in it. And there was only a small number of clubs actually entered the original Cup Winners' Cup, and we didn't enter. So, but the English Cup winners, Wolverhampton Wanderers, entered. Rangers, who won the Scottish Cup, were in it. And the first one was won by Fiorentina in 1961. They beat Rangers in the only two-legged final. But what actually happened was after that, UEFA recognized the competition and also in 1963 retrospectively recognized the first one in 60-61. So, second season is when everybody really got involved. St. Pat's had won the cup in 1961. I know for a long, 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 long time, St. Pat's fans were dreaming of FAI Cup success. I know they've had it quite a bit in recent years, but Pat's fans were, a lot of them were harking back to 1961 and their last FAI Cup success for a long, long time, up until their many great days out in the Aviva Stadium in recent years. But Pats won the cup in 1961, entered the Cup Winners' Cup. They were beaten by Dunfermline from Scotland, well beaten home and away, 8-1 in aggregate. Ginger O'Rourke got the first Irish goal in the Cup Winners' Cup and became our first goal scorer. So moving on, I mean, Shamrock Rovers in 62, they were beaten home and away by both of Plovdiv. But we go on to 1963, and probably a very famous tie, and the only time an Irish club has ever drawn Barcelona in European competition. So Shelburne, they won the cup in 1963. They beat Cork Hibernians, and what a draw to get to play Barcelona in the Cup Winners' Cup.
Are we talking about the same kind of, I presume we're talking about the same kind of Barcelona that we now know now as the dual giants of Spanish football by this stage in the mid-60s?
Yeah, I mean, they were still a massive club. I mean, I suppose what needs to be said is they weren't necessarily, they wouldn't have been as well known here back in the 60s. But I mean, they had won the Spanish League, I think in, was it 1959 or 1960? Real Madrid at the time were very much the dominant side. They'd already won 5 European Cups in a row at this stage. But I mean, Barcelona had been, they'd been to a European Cup final. They actually knocked Real Madrid out of the European Cup at this stage. So they were still an absolutely massive club. It was still a huge draw for Shelburne. But I suppose you have to put this in perspective that there wasn't even that much television in the country in those days. So, and certainly there was no Spanish football on TV until very, very recently. So people wouldn't necessarily have been aware of how big a club Barcelona was. And generally for Irish football fans in those days, the orbit rarely extended beyond the English league. I mean, would have been aware of your Manchester United's, your Liverpool's, big teams at the time. Everton were huge in those days. And Arsenal, Tottenham, etc. But really, the likes of a Barcelona or even a Real Madrid weren't necessarily the big names they would be today.
I'm just looking through their squad here for the 63-64 season, and they've got Sander Coxís here. One of the a brilliant player in his own right, and a couple of other names here, Ray and Pareda and stuff like that. So this is a very good Barcelona team. Maybe not reaching the heights of their Real Madrid counterparts, but certainly an exceptional team in itself.
Oh, absolutely, and I mean they did. They beat Shelburne home and away. They won 2-0 in Dublin and 3-1 in the Camp Nou. Paddy Bonham from the penalty spot had the honour of scoring Shelburne's goal and scoring in the Camp Nou. So, but what an achievement and what a night for Shelburne to be able to walk out against Barcelona in European competition. And the reality now, and I said it's fantastic for Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers to be playing in the league phase of the Conference League. But even still, it's difficult to see a path where one of our clubs could end up playing the likes of a Barcelona again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and it's a fantastic example of perhaps maybe that back then that the competitions were a little bit more straightforward and a little bit more of a level playing field. That, you know, we've talked about it on before with Irish clubs in the Champions League and some of the famous ties that they got over the years as well. So it gave you a kind of that bigger opportunity to play those so-called bigger teams.
Yeah, I mean, effectively, I'd have to look back in the exact dates, but UEFA consisted of around 32, 33 countries in those days. And for the likes of the Cup Winners' Cup or the European Cup, they might have had a preliminary round for two teams played off. But otherwise, they put 32 names into a hat and they drew out 16 ties. And it was as simple as that. You could get the Spanish Cup winners or you could get the Cup winners from, well, what would have been Czechoslovakia, Poland, etc. And certainly what was very, very important in those days and right up to the 1990s was the draw, because you could lose a hell of a lot of money if you got the wrong tie. Because the travel costs, particularly to Eastern Europe, would have been excessive. There was no European money in those days. There was no $4 million coming in from UEFA for reaching the league phase. You got to keep your home gate and you hoped that would pay your travel costs to get and your hotel costs, etc., to get to the to the return leg or for the away leg. And even, I mean, in the research for this, I was reading up about Bray Wanderers, and we'll go on and talk about them in the 90s. But they were very concerned. They drew Trabzonspor from Turkey, and the cost of that was horrendous. And they were looking at a huge financial loss.
Is that kind of one of the reasons why, in the early stages of European competitions on the continent, whether it's Champions League, Cup Winners' Cup, etc., that kind of, I suppose, there between maybe Irish clubs and English clubs, etc., there was a bit of a lukewarm kind of response as to how important it was, and, you know, kind of being part of the competition simply because everything was off your own bat?
Yeah, I mean, I think I wouldn't say necessarily a lukewarm response. There was, if you take the early days of the European Cup, the FA famously stopped Chelsea, the 1955 champions, from playing in it. But there was, it certainly wasn't, it didn't, from a financial point of view, it wasn't the automatic success it is today. So the draw made a huge difference to how financially lucrative it was. And potentially it was financially disastrous. But whereas if you qualify for Europe today, you're in the money. You know, no matter what happens, you're in the money. And which is a good thing, because it's quite an achievement. Yeah. It's an achievement to qualify for Europe. So, I mean, Shelbourne would have done well out of playing Barcelona the year before. Shamrock Rovers would have been very disappointed to have to go all the way to Plovdiv. And it wouldn't have been financially beneficial for them.
Yeah, and that gets a great segue into our next match that we're going to talk about, because it is Shamrock Rovers. And of all the ties that we're going to talk about today, I feel like this is the one that is the most agonizing to talk about.
Yeah. I mean, I'll briefly gloss over it. In 64, Cork Celtic did. They drew Slavia Sofia. Financially ruinous tie, but a fantastic away result. Donal Leahy got the goal. They drew 1-1 in Bulgaria. It did mean a big crowd in Flower Lodge for the return, but they were beaten 2-0. Limerick in 65 lost the cup final to Shamrock Rovers. Rovers weren't champions in 65. Drumcondra were champions, but Rovers had actually opted for the Intercity Fairs Cup, which they considered to be more prestigious. And Limerick were given the Cup Winners' Cup slot, but were beaten home and away by, well, beaten at home in Dalymount Park and losing in Sofia as well, 4-1 in an aggregate. But we'll go on and talk about 1966 and what might have been. And one of the great ties, one of the really, really wonderful performances by an Irish club in Europe, and one that came so, so close to, well, it's a what might have been. So Shamrock Rovers against Bayern Munich. And so first of all, I should talk about Shamrock Rovers against Spore of Luxembourg in the first round, where Rovers absolutely battered them. I mean, they beat them, I think it was 8-2 in aggregate. Very comfortable. Gets them into the last 16, a place in the quarterfinals at stake, and they draw Bayern Munich. And it was a cracking game in Dalymount Park. Billy Dixon with the goal for Rovers, finished 1-1. A little bit unlucky not to be taking a lead to Germany, but still a huge achievement to draw with Bayern Munich. I appreciate we did talk on a previous podcast about Drumcondra actually beating Bayern over 90 minutes, but they came nowhere close to knocking them out. So you're in the return leg in the Grunwald. It's the home stadium now of 1860 Munich, but it was shared at that stage. A very famous ground, and fantastic character, well worth visiting if you're ever in Munich. But Bayern took a 2-goal lead, and I should point out at this stage, it was the introduction of the away goals rule in 1966 was brought in for the Cup Winners' Cup. So in previous ties, there used to be things like a playoff, in a third game playoff, or a toss of a coin. In fact, the toss of the coin still continued before there was penalty shootouts and everything. But anyway, for 1966-67, there was the away goals rule was in place. So And I mentioned that because Rovers had already drawn 1-1 in Dalymount. They were 2-0 down in Munich, but in the second half, a brilliant comeback and goals from Bobby Gilbert and Liam Toohey had the game 2-2 on the night, 3-3 in aggregate. But crucially, on the away goals rule, Shamrock Rovers were ahead. And they came within 4 minutes of knocking Bayern Munich. And that was the Bayern Munich of Sepp Maier in goal. And unfortunately for Shamrock Rovers, they had Gerd Müller up front, who arguably was one of the greatest strikers of all time. And how many times he saved Bayern's bacon, he saved the German, Germany as it was, bacon. But Gerd Müller, 4 minutes from time, scored the goal. Bayern won 3-2 and they went through and knocked Shamrock Rovers out. And there is a segue to that because Bayern went all the way to the final of the Cup Winners' Cup. And it was actually played in Bavaria in Nuremberg. And they beat Rangers 1-0 after extra time to claim their first ever European trophy. But they were 4 minutes away from being knocked out by the mighty Shamrock Rovers.
Yeah, an incredible achievement. I think when you think about Gerd Müller, I think his entire career was just about breaking hearts, really, wasn't it? I mean, he just, there were so many times that he just came up with this, a goal out of maybe nowhere, and he just broke so many footballing hearts around the world. But it's a fantastic display, and of all the matches that we talk about, this is probably the one that really, really gets away. It's the one that you feel so much for Shamrock Rovers because they were literally just minutes away from a huge, huge, huge tie upset.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, we will go on because no League of Ireland side, and we will go on and talk about the Irish League in future podcasts, but no League of Ireland side has still to this day has ever reached the last eight of a European competition. And it's probably as close, maybe Dundalk will make a case for Tommy McConville in 1979, but Rovers in Munich is probably as close as we've ever come. And they were 4 minutes away from it.
Yeah. Is Liam Toohey player and manager?
No, he was a player in those days. He did go on to become a great manager as well, obviously.
So we'll move on now to 1969. It's Shamrock Rovers again, and this time it's more German opposition.
Yeah, so I mean, as people may remember, Shamrock Rovers won 6 FAI Cups in a row from 1964 to 1969. Now, they obviously didn't enter the 64 Cup Winners' Cup because they'd won the double. And as we said, they didn't enter in 65. But for the next 4 years, they did enter. And the next time they caused an upset or came quite close was they played another famous German side, Schalke 04 or Schalke 04. And they beat them in Dublin. Eric Barber, probably a name more famous with Shelburne than with Shamrock Rovers, a Shelburne legend, but he actually was with Shamrock Rovers at that stage, and he scored both goals as they came from behind to beat them 2-1 in Dublin. And so they did take a lead to Germany this time, but it wasn't to be, and they were well beaten 3-0 in Gelsenkirchen. But again, a famous performance by Shamrock Rovers against obviously a legendary team.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, 2 quickfire goals as well. I think it was 70 and 71 or something like that, minutes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they were a goal down, and twice in a minute he struck to give them the lead to take the Gelsenkirchen. And I mean, Schalke went all the way to the semi-finals that year and lost to the eventual winners, Manchester City.
Yeah, we seem to, Irish teams, we kind of mentioned it a bit before, Irish teams seem to end up playing teams that either go all the way to the final or they end up getting to the semi-finals or something like that when we talk about them. But we're going to move, I suppose, down south, as Cork look to make their mark in the tournament as well. Tell us a little bit about this, and maybe a little bit about their opponents too.
Yeah, so maybe just give a quick mention to Bohemians' first venture into Europe. They won the cup in 1970. and they played Got Baldov from Czechoslovakia. So they were beaten 2-1 disappointingly in Daly Mount, but did manage a 2-2 draw in I think it was Lynn, and but went out 4-3 in aggregate. Limerick won the cup famously in 71, but beaten home and away by Torino. But in 1972, the famous Cork Hibernians were drawn against Pezoporikos from Cyprus. And at the time, you may remember, and we talked in the European Cup podcast about Cork Celtic drawing Ammonia in 1974. Yeah. And with the war and the political situation in Cyprus, Pezoporikos weren't able to host Hibs in Larnaca. So both legs were played in Flower Lodge.
Oh, wow.
So the first leg was deemed the home leg for Pezoporikos. So in theory, away goals still counted, which I think would have been a little bit unfair. But as it transpired, Cork Hibs won the away leg 2-1 in Flower Lodge and went on to win the home leg 4-1 in Flower Lodge. So obviously home advantage made a little difference in the second leg there. But
it's the crowd that got him over the line.
It must have been. And so John Lawson, some very famous names in Cork football, John Lawson and Martin Sheehan with the goals in the 2-1 win. John Lawson grabbed a couple in the return leg. And the great Donny Wallace, he had won the league with Limerick in 1960, and he was scoring in Europe for Cork Hibs in 1972. And the great Maya Dennehy as well scored in the 4-1 win.
Was this played like in a, I presume it was played in a couple of days, like in 3 days or something like that? Because obviously they were coming over from Cyprus, was it?
Yeah. So it was played over. It was one game was at the weekend, and then the next game was midweek. So it was played over about 3 or 4 days, from what I can recall. And Cork Hibs actually only produced one program for the game, with both dates on the cover as well. So
nobody saves money like the League of Ireland.
No, absolutely not. So it did set up a glamour tie for Hibs, and so they got through to play also play Schalke and Nullfair. And but it wasn't to be. Again, a 0-0 draw in Cork, which again was quite credible. Admirable. But a 3-0 defeat in Gelsenkirchen against the famous German side.
Yeah, and even back then, and we say it even now in European Cup ties, how important home advantage is to Irish clubs, because you can see that it does make a difference to Irish clubs, particularly when they're playing, you know, perhaps against a bigger, better opposition, that the home advantage really is key for them progressing.
Yeah, it did. I mean, it did make a difference. And I mean, I suppose in those days as well, travel was a lot more arduous, and the preparation wouldn't be as good. So, and you're arriving in this strange country, and you have 5-10,000 screaming Irishmen. This wouldn't have been the case in Flower Lodge, where the pitch was always immaculate. But in a lot of the League of Ireland grounds, the pitches would not be. In fact, apart from Glenmalure Park in Milltown and Flower Lodge, pretty much all the pitches were not up to scratch. I mean, even Daly Mount Park was a bit iffy in those days, and certainly the Markets Field was no billiard table. I certainly remember it from the 70s, and there was a bit of home advantage there as well. So.
With the ball getting stuck in the mud, was it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it was. And if you're lucky, the grass might be cut, etc.
Fantastic. So Cork Hibs, great win there, and they only have to travel up and down, not even up and down the road for that one. Same place, Flower Lodge. Interesting. And then we move on again to 72-73, and it's, am I right in saying it's Cork Hibs again?
So Cork Hibs, they won the cup in 72, famously that Maya Dennehy hat-trick against Waterford to set up those Pezoporikos and Schalke ties. They retained the cup in 1973, and for a long time, actually, it was only themselves and Shamrock Rovers who'd ever retained the FAI Cup. They beat Shelburne in Floor Lodge, actually. They got the replay outside of Dublin, which was quite an achievement. If I remember correctly, that was the first ever FAI Cup final played outside of Dublin, because even when Cork Athletic and Evergreen, two Cork teams, reached the 1953 final, it was played at a neutral Dalymount Park, and the replay the following Wednesday was also played in Dalymount Park. But 1973, Hibs and Shelburne drew in Dalymount, and the replay was in Floor Lodge, and Hibs won it. And they got to play Bannock Ostrava in the Cup Winners' Cup. But were beaten home and away, and there was no hope of any heroics. And it was also, of course, the famous Cork Hibs last time being in Europe. They'd been in Europe against the likes of Valencia, Borussia Mönchengladbach. We'd already talked about Mönchengladbach. They played Pezzoporicus, as we just said, Schalke and Bannock Ostrava, and that was it for Cork Hibs.
Were they gone by the end of the decade?
Yeah, they were gone in 1976. They went on a tour of North America, an 11-game tour, and that, like Belfast Celtic from the Irish League, their last games, two very, very famous clubs, two glamour clubs, and their last games as a senior football club were played 3,000 miles away in North America. And so Cork Hibs came back from America, and there was no team in the League of Ireland.
Oh dear. But such as we've said before is the story of Cork football. They come, they appear, they win everything and disappear again. So we move on to, we've got Galway then here in the 85-86.
Yeah, I might mention a few in between, yeah, because there's a few notable first appearances. Or, well, Finn Harps had qualified for Europe in 1973, but they famously won the Cup in 1974. And it remains the only time either of the main two national trophies have gone to Donegal. And they drew Bursaspor from Turkey. So financially, a bit of a disastrous tie for Harps. They made quite a game of it over in the first leg in Bursa. Charlie Ferry was man of the match. He equalised for Harps. Very famous winger, great player in the 70s. And Brendan Bradley, another, look, well, when I say legendary striker, he is still the all-time leading goal scorer in the League of Ireland. So that I don't even need to say anything else on that. But Brendan Bradley made it 3-2, but they were eventually beaten 4-2. And the Turks packed the defence in Ballybofey, and a scoreless draw was enough to send them through. Another first and an only appearance in Europe in 1975, when Home Farm famously won, it's 50 years now, but Home Farm won the FAI Cup for the first and only time. Yeah. They beat Shelburne in the final, went on to play Lens, the famous French team in Europe. And a very, very creditable 1-1 draw in Talca. Michael Brophy with the goal on 20 minutes to equalise. But in France, Lens were far superior and won by 6-0 to knock Home Farm out. But let's go on to 76 and talk about Bohemians. Bose won the cup. They beat Drogheda in the final. And they drew the Danish team, Esbjerg. And it's a funny one now, because if an Irish team were to draw Denmark, a Danish team in Europe, the Danes would be hot favourites. But Bose were actually favourites for this tie. They won 2-1 in Dalymount, but made a bit of hard work over it. Gerry Ryan, his future Irish international, won one of the goals. But it was actually an OG after the Danes had equalised that gave Bose a 2-1 win, which was a bit nervy to take to Denmark. But Noel Mitten with the only goal in the Danish fishing port to put Bose through 3-1 in aggregate, home and away wins there. But probably a not very lucrative tie in the next round. The Polish team Rocklaw or Wrocław, or I'm sure I've murdered that pronunciation, but Bose were well beaten in the next round. So it was another story of a good first round win, but the quarterfinals proved a bridge too far.
Yeah, and I know we kind of mention it as well with these things, and you've kind of said it basically, you know, in that time period, it was about how much it was going to cost the club if it was far away, etc. So are we kind of saying that the ones that weren't too bad for teams to travel, which it would have been about the Benelux countries, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, and then beyond that was you were talking perhaps serious money?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the dream draw was always an English or a Scottish team, or maybe an Irish league club, because the travel costs would have been low. And particularly if you got a big English team or a big Scottish team, you'd have a big gate because the fans would know. So the big gate was crucial. And often in those days, our clubs would ask the opposition to, if they were drawn away first, to switch the tie. So because if you're playing at home first, the tie is still alive. Whereas if you go away first and you lose 3-4-0, the crowd aren't going to turn up for the return because the tie is probably dead. But as you say, then if you can't get a team from these islands, it's probably somebody nearby like France, Germany, Spain, Benelux. And the other advantage of those countries, even Italy, except Switzerland, is you're likely to get a bigger name, you're likely to get a bigger crowd. So, I mean, people would be much more likely to show up for even a Lons for Home Farm than they would for a Slask Rocklaw or Wrocław from Poland, who they've probably never heard of. Now, a lot of these teams from behind the Iron Curtain in those days, they were really strong, really crack teams. I mean, I love this competition, but you can go back on some of the winners from Eastern Europe. I mean, Slovan Bratislava won it in 1969. They beat Barcelona in the final. In 1974, with just past the 50th anniversary of Magdeburg beating Milan, I think it was. The holders, Milan, actually, they beat in the 1974 final. So, I mean, there were some really strong teams from Eastern Europe in those days, and they were winning. I think Dynamo Kiev, if I correct, won it in 1975. There was a brilliant final. Yeah,
I saw a tweet from somebody the other day, and it's not necessarily club related, but he was talking to somebody in Slovakia about, you know, football or whatever, and he was like, "Geez, it must be great to see your country as European champions." And they were like, "What are you talking about?" He was like, Czechoslovakia, you won a European Cup. You are Slovakian, Czech Republic. You've got a European Cup to your name. And they were like, "Oh yeah, didn't think that." Like, so it's mad that when we think of Eastern European football, as you say, we kind of forget that they had in really great teams both nationally and club wise.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, the Czechs. I mean, it's only recently actually Slovakia have been credited with that title that the Czechoslovakia won in 76. Mm. But if I remember correctly, there were quite a few Slovaks on that team. And so certainly they contributed to that success. I mean, there were some brilliant Yugoslavian teams back in the day. They maybe didn't win too much, but there was some, well, Red Star Belgrade obviously won a European Cup, but from the national team perspective, they were very much the nearly men in a lot of tournaments. I think they might have won Olympic gold all right, which probably doesn't have the same prestige, obviously.
Mm. We did talk about Yugoslavia on the last podcast when we talked about when they played Northern Ireland as well. We'll move on now, and we're talking about Galway United appearing in the Cup Winners' Cup. Tell us a little bit about that.
Maybe let me mention a few more in between. Then another, actually, let me go back to Yugoslavia. And it's Croatia these days. I got to be careful with my but it was certainly from 1977, the Hajduk Split were in the Cup Winners' Cup, and they drew Dundalk, and a very famous win for Dundalk. I know they actually won in Split a few years ago, but Terry Flanagan, with the only goal 5 minutes from time, gave them a 1-0 lead to take the Split. And probably one of the very unfortunate own goals in Irish European history. Dundalk were a goal down in the second half. And unfortunately for Jackie, this is still on YouTube, but a Jackie McManus own goal made it 2-0 and split it. And Hajduk eventually went on to win 4-0 to put Dundalk out. The following year, Shamrock Rovers were... where in Europe, probably the Sligo Rovers fans can switch off now, because I know that I was only talking to someone the other day, and that defeat rankles. I mean, the 1978 FAI Cup final is probably one of the great injustices. And even as a non-Sligo Rovers fan, it can hurt a little bit for any Sligo Rovers player fan. It really, really, really hurts. But anyway, let's just say the late John Carpenter never went on his holidays in Sligo after that. But Shamrock Rovers did win the cup. And they went on to play in the Cup Winners' Cup. They beat Apoel Nicosia home and away. Johnny Giles with the goal in Milltown. Steve Linux, great player, great winger. He got the second one, and he got the only goal in Nicosia as well. So comfortable enough for Rovers in the end. They went on to play Bannock Ostrava. Wasn't, again, financially lucrative and well beaten. I mentioned Waterford, 1980, famous FAI Cup win. Brian Gardner with the goal that beat Pats. They played Hibs of Malta. Had a very, very disappointing defeat out there after Tommy Jackson had missed a penalty. They lost 1-0 to a goal midway through the second half, but never in doubt in the second leg. 4-0, 3 up at half time. Paul Kirk with a couple of goals. The great Alf Finucane with one of the others. Quick mention for Dundalk in 1981. They also knocked out Fram Reykjavik. They were in control over in the first leg, leading 1-0 through Mick Fairclough. Conceded a couple of goals in the second half, but again, the return was never in doubt, and they won 4-0. And that set up another great tie and another famous one, I suppose, because Dundalk played Tottenham Hotspur in the next round. And I wouldn't say it's a what might have been, but it certainly was one of the great Irish European performances. I mean, they drew 1-1 in Oriel Park. Mick Fairclough with the equaliser with about 10 minutes to go. They went to White Hart Lane. Now, they were behind on the away goals rule, but it was 0-0 for over an hour until the great Gareth Crooks put Tottenham 1-0 up. And that's the way it stayed. Spurs beat them 2-1 in aggregate, which was certainly very respectable to be up against the FA Cup holders, a great Tottenham Absolutely, team yeah. as it was at the time.
We talked to, when we had Tony Galvin on, some people might remember on the podcast a little while back when I talked to him, and that was a real crack Tottenham side. It was filled with just brilliant players, not consistent enough to give themselves a league title, but they certainly were a brilliant team, two FA Cups and a UEFA Cup in that period as well. So just yeah. a great team for Dundalk to play.
Yeah, agreed. I remember, I wasn't at the game, but I remember the whole build up to it, the crowd, the Oriel Park was absolutely mobbed, and actually Drogheda, we can go on and talk about the UEFA Cup, because Drogheda ended up playing that great Tottenham team as well, but let's say they didn't come as close as Dundalk.
I talked anyway. to Tony about that. He glossed over that pretty quick. He was just like, yeah, we played them, all right.
So I think it was a 14, if I remember rightly, 14 goal, a 14 goal thriller. I have to mention Limerick's, the anniversary just passed of the last time I ever saw a Limerick side play in Europe, and unfortunately I haven't missed any. But in 1982, Limerick drew AZ Alkmaar, the Dutch cup holders. They had they'd actually lost the UEFA Cup final the year before to Ipswich Town, 5-4 in aggregating in a thrilling final. It was home and away in those days. But drew Limerick in the Markets Field. It was a 1-1 draw. A little bit unfortunate. John Power, a young goalkeeper, had just taken over from Kevin Fitzpatrick, a fantastic keeper, and he had a brilliant game. But there was a new rule introduced in those days, and a goalkeeper couldn't pick the ball up a second time after they released it. So prior to 1982, the goalie could pick the ball up in their own box. They could throw it down, and then they could pick it up again. But that rule changed in 1982. John Power forgot about it. Ref gave an indirect free kick, and Jos Jonker scored for Alkmaar. Pat Nolan equalised the last Limerick goal in Europe. Alfinucan had a goal disallowed for offside, which was marginal at best. And but it ended 1-1. Limerick went to Alkmaar, beaten 1-0 by a late goal. At 0-0, I remember Gary Humes going around the goalkeeper, unfortunately pushed a little bit too wide and found the side netting. But it was a very, very creditable performance by Limerick, only losing 2-1 in aggregate to a crack Dutch side. And I would have to say the better team won, but certainly over the two legs there were chances, and it is a case of what might have been. Go on and talk. We'll come to Galway United and their first time in Europe. But 1984, UCD, their first time in Europe. The famous 1984 FAI Cup final. Right. They beat Shamrock Rovers in a replay. Ken O'Doherty, Limerick's Joe Hanrahan was on that team. But they drew Everton. And, I mean, we talk about cracked ties, about big gates. Everton had won the FA Cup in 1984. They were a huge draw for UCD. Packed out Talca Park, and a very, very creditable scoreless draw to keep the tie alive for the second leg in Goodison Park. They certainly kept it alive. They went a goal down, so they were losing 1-0. And they came very, very close to actually knocking Everton out. Paul Caffrey, I think he was only on as a sub, got in the last minute of the game, and he rounded the keeper. He was just pushed too far wide, and he couldn't get the effort on target. But a goal, of course, would have put UCD through in the away goals rule. And Everton were booed off by their own fans, and UCD were clapped off. And but it was Everton that went on to the next round, and not only the next round, they went all the way to the final and won the Cup Winners' Cup. They beat Rapid Vienna the final in Rotterdam, but they got quite a scare from UCD.
Yeah, that Everton side of the 80s was a brilliant side too. So UCD were really, really doing well to keep the scoreline down and maybe even done something more and knocked him out.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it was a brilliant performance. Now, it was a defensive performance. They had the great Tony O'Neill, Theo Dunn. The team was well coached. It was certainly, they set their stall out to keep everything very tight in both legs, in both Talca and Goodison, but it very nearly worked. And I mean, it was certainly very creditable to only lose 1-0 in aggregate, but to come so close to knocking them out was obviously incredible.
Yeah, we'll move on to that Galway tie, and they're playing, am I right in saying, Lyngby of Denmark?
Yeah, I think it's probably pronounced something like Lungbu or something that. But yeah, and I probably murdered it as well. But Galway, first time in Europe. They got to the cup final in 1985, and it's another very, very, very painful one for Limerick people, because we met Galway in the semi-final, and Shamrock Rovers had already, they had the league wrapped up. They'd won the semi-final against Athlone on the Friday night. So Limerick were playing Galway for a place in the final, a place in Europe, and two goals up in Talca, and Galway came back, a late Johnny Glynn goal. He was only about 17 at the time. And in the replay in Athlone, a freak goal, John Mannion deflected shot in extra time, won it for Galway. So it was Galway ended up in Europe for the first time. And Limerick, who'd been waiting 3 years at the time for a European tie, are now waiting 43 years. But let's move on. In fairness to Galway, they only lost 1-0 in Copenhagen. A very creditable performance, kept the tie alive. And I suppose there's actually nearly a podcast in itself in Galway in Europe and where their European ties were played. This is probably the least controversial one, but they used the sports ground, because anybody that remembers Terryland Park from the 70s and 80s, and it's a venue I was in many, many times. It was Well, let's just say we were talking about great pitches, and certainly it wasn't Flower Lodge or Milltown. And the spectator facilities were pretty basic. But so it's actually never hosted a European tie. But it may well do fairly soon, because I appreciate Galway are doing very well, and Galway football's on the up at the moment. But their first ever European tie in 1985, lost 1-0 away, return leg in the sports grounds. And I know I was in college at the time, and I hadn't been back to college. My dad drove up from Limerick, and we went to the return match. And quite a decent crowd in the sports ground. Real hope that Galway could turn it around. It wasn't to be. The Danes were actually very impressive. 2-0 up in the first half. Galway did come back in the second half. Paul Murphy got one back. Dennis Bonner, his brother might be a little bit more famous, but Packy, obviously. But Dennis was a very, very decent centre half, a decent League of Ireland player. He made it 2-2. The Danes actually got a late winner on the day, and to win 4-2 in aggregate. But it was great for Galway to taste European football and to have European football in the West of Ireland.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really, really important. Even now, you know, we, as the league stands, we might only have one team from the West of Ireland in the Premier Division next season. But that's a discussion perhaps for another day. We're going to move on now to the Cup Winners' Cup of the next season that you've got here, 86-87.
Yeah, so actually Waterford didn't win the Cup. They were beaten by Shamrock Rovers in the final. They were beaten by the great Jim McLaughlin's. I think he was still manager that season. They beat, and the Rovers had done, they did the double in 85. They did the double again in 86. And they were on to go on to do the double in 87. And it was only UCD in 84.
That was it. I was thinking. It was UCD that denied them a quadruple double, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I suppose they denied them before it ever got started. But yes, they won four leagues in a row. So anyway, it's actually also the last time I talked about the last time we had a Limerick side in Europe, 1982. The last time we had a Waterford side in Europe was 1986. And they drew a great and a really, really impressive Bordeaux side. And my father was actually at the match. I wasn't. I don't know why I couldn't have gone with him at the time, but maybe I was already back in college. I can't remember, to be honest. But I know he drove down to it from Limerick, and they were a very impressive side. They beat Waterford 2-1 in Kilcohan Park. I suppose I talked about Terryland Park, and the Kilcohan Park wasn't an awful lot better. They had better spectator facilities, but the pitch was certainly a bit of a mud bath as well. And Waterford did get to play some European ties there. And the last time it was that great Bordeaux team. And Noel Sinnott got a late goal back, but they lost 2-1 in Kilcohan, beaten 4-0 in Bordeaux. Totally outclassed by a really top quality side.
And, yeah, I've just looked up their squad there for that season. They had Jean Tigana, and they also had Patrick Battiston in their team as well. So that was quite a stacked Bordeaux side.
Yeah, I mean, it's actually sad to see them with the financial issues. Yeah. They've dropped down the leagues now in France. But I mean, also a wonderful city. I know. Many fans would have been there with the Republic of Ireland for Euro 2016 against Belgium. Beautiful city, famous wine region, and many incredible football teams over the years. We can go on. They obviously played Pats back in the 60s as well, but it was a really crack team in 1986. And I know from speaking to my father and to other people that were at the game at Kilcohan, they were really, really impressive, and they played some quality football, and it was a 2-1 hammering, not to mind the 4-0 result in Bordeaux.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. And those players I mentioned, well, Battiston, Tigana, they were part of the French side too, that Northern Ireland out of the World Cup in 82 as well, wasn't it, that we talked about on the last podcast.
So yeah,
top international players as well.
Absolutely, and had knocked the Republic of Ireland out in qualifying for that tournament as well. So
breaking Irish hearts all over the island.
Absolutely, but a very talented French team. So
I'm interested to know you picked Derry City in 88, 89. It's a bit of a shellacking, but they do have a good, I'm guessing, first tie.
Yeah, so I mean, there was the whole historic element of this as well, because as people I'm sure know, Derry City had played in the Irish League up until 1972. They had qualified for Europe in 1964 when they won the Irish Cup and played Steaua Bucharest. In 1965, they beat, they put five past Lynn Oslo, got through to the second round against Anderlecht, and they suffered a very heavy defeat in Belgium. They were beaten, I think, 9-0. But the return leg was not allowed to be played in the Brandywell. And I think it was more down to the facilities rather than any, there was no security concerns in 1965. So Derry actually had to withdraw, and they never played the return leg, and they lost out financially. So obviously the whole history then, they left the Irish League in 1972, joined the League of Ireland in 1985. And the first time in Europe as a League of Ireland club was when they got to the 1988 Cup final, lost to Dundalk, a very good Dundalk side that did the double that year. I was actually at the Cup final, and Derry played really well, a little bit unfortunate, a John Cleary penalty, if I remember correctly. And I was also actually at this Cardiff City tie. It was a really historic tie. Packed Brandywell, totally sold out. No all seater rules in those days. We were standing, lucky to get tickets, and it was actually 12,000 people. There was no away fans for the security. Oh, sorry, when I say no away fans, officially there were no away fans. So the rule was that there was no away allocation. Security situation at the time, obviously the troubles were still on. Cardiff coming over from Wales. So fans didn't really travel. Now, some did. There were some in the crowd. So there was a full house. The Brandywell held 12,000 of those. I can't actually remember the official attendance, but I do know I was standing on the terraces with my dad, and he had driven the whole way up from Limerick, and it was packed. It was absolutely packed. And I mean, we would have been trying, my dad would always prefer to sit in the stand. We would have been trying for stand tickets in those days. It just wasn't possible. We're lucky to get in. They did make announcements. There was the odd Cardiff City fan in the stadium. They were certainly made very welcome. There was an announcement for Cardiff City fans. There was going to be a special bus or something. And there was a big clap from the home fans. So there were certainly no concerns over trouble. It wasn't a great game. Finished 0-0. To be honest, I don't remember a lot about the game. It was a pretty nondescript game, but Derry were beaten 4-0 in the return, and there certainly were Derry fans were able to visit Cardiff for the return leg, but they were obviously well beaten.
Yeah, short ferry journey to Wales for that one, I'd imagine. Just to put it in context, by the way, today the Brandywell holds about 6,500. Is their capacity at the Brandywell. So 12,000 people packed into the Brandywell it's a hell of a sardine can, but what an atmosphere.
Yeah, it used to be a brilliant atmosphere. And I mean, we talked about this before on a podcast, but when they joined the League of Ireland, they were regularly getting crowds of 12,000. And sometimes they may not have had, I want to be careful what I say here, but let's just say, The rules in Northern Ireland are different to the Republic of Ireland, because there's no VAT on gate receipts here. So for any other League of Ireland club, the gate receipts, you get to keep them, unless it's an FAI Cup tie. But in Northern Ireland, you have to pay, I think it was at the time, 15% VAT on gate receipts to the UK government. And there were certainly times when Derry City's attendances might have been questioned. But I know from talking to somebody who was a bit peeved at one of the early games when he couldn't get in and the attendance was given at less than 12,000. Well, he said they locked the gates and they weren't taking our money. And there was hundreds of us locked out. So how come the attendance was only this? But
everything changes when the tax man is involved.
Well, I think so. Yeah. And
is that am I right in saying that is that Jim McLaughlin's Derry City? Yeah, that's the same team, no?
Yeah. So, Jim, yes, that's correct. So, Jim McLaughlin's Derry City, that's actually the team that went on to win the treble that season. It would have been Jim McLaughlin's Derry City.
Yeah. So, Derry City out, losing 4-0 to Cardiff City. The next season, then, it's Cork City against... what I can only imagine is a very, very good Torpedo Moscow side.
Yeah, so, I mean, this was, of course, a first time in Europe for Cork City. And a first European tie in Cork. Well, sorry, I'm not being quite correct there. I was going to say a first European tie in Cork for 15 years. It would have been I'll get my maths right. Yeah, it is 15 years for a Cork club. But, of course, we did mention Bohemians. Had played in Flower Lodge in 1978, but the Cork football public didn't turn out for that one. So it was the first time a Cork club had played in Europe for 15 years. Cork City, who had lost the cup final after a replay to that famous Derry City team, Jim McLaughlin's Derry side, a disastrous draw for them, Torpedo Moscow. Again, a very talented side. They absolutely... battered Cork City, obviously, and financially ruinous. I mean, it was Cork City lost a lot of money on that tie, and it wouldn't be the case today. But the costs of going to Moscow in 1989 would have been significant, and the home gate would not have been any way to cover for that.
I'd imagine there was extra costs for things like visas and all that kind of stuff if you had to go to the Soviet Union and stuff like that as well, not just... like planes or trains.
Yeah, I mean, I was never actually in the old Soviet Union, but even going to Russia and trying to get a Russian visa in the day was quite arduous. And I think my first time going to Moscow, I had to make 6 trips to the Russian embassy, and that was not unusual in that. You download a form and they give you a form. Oh, that's the old form. I said, that's the one you gave me. But yeah, but I mean, it was just, they didn't want you. They didn't want you
it's
visiting.
It's almost as if communist Russia didn't like people from the outside coming in. Cork smashed over the two legs, 6-0, 5-0, and then 1-0 as well. Impressive Moscow side that turns them over though as well, doesn't it? I mean, you got to say that they were a good side.
Oh yeah, I mean, look, the teams coming out of that Soviet Union at the time, there were some incredibly talented football sides, and I mean, obviously Torpedo Moscow along with Spartak Moscow, CSKA Moscow, some very, very famous clubs. Even from Moscow alone, before you get on to your likes of Zenit St. Petersburg, etc. Some top quality sides came out of the old, what's modern day Russia or the old Soviet Union.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm looking at the first round draw here, and apparently the Partizan Celtic game was the games to be at, as they drew 6-6 and Celtic go through an away goal. So that would have been a incredible game to be at. But any more great cup winners? Cup ties for Irish clubs?
Yeah, so I'll go on and talk about a few. I mean, Bray Wanderers, their first time in Europe, they famously won the 1990 FAI Cup final against St. Francis, John Ryan hat-trick. So they drew Trabzonspor from Turkey. Again, this was one of the worrying ties for them. They were looking at financial ruin because of this tie. But they played the first leg in Talca Park. They got a big crowd They were delighted with that. They put on a show as well. Martin Nugent grabbed an equaliser and they got a draw, beaten in Turkey. But they felt, certainly in the newspaper reports after the game, they were felt a lot more comfortable with actually the financial issues from the tie after getting such a good gate. And interesting as well that the halftime raffle for the game, the winning prize was a trip to the return leg. And the winner of the raffle, I think, was a Mr. Clark from Belfast. So he came all the way down from Belfast to see Bray and Trabzonspor, and he won a trip to Trabzon.
Not even a Bray Wanderers fan, is he?
Well, we don't know. We don't know that. I mean, maybe Bray are big in Belfast. Who knows? But,
I don't think Bray are even big in Bray, are they? I take it back, Bray fans. I take it back.
Yeah, it's okay. Just remember who said that, not me.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So when does the... So talk to us a little bit about the Cup Winners' Den Cup after that, because... What happens? When does it get taken away? And I suppose maybe the reasons why we don't have it anymore.
Yeah, so I'll mention maybe a few more times then in the 90s. So we were in the 1990s now. Nothing major. I mean, Shelbourne led Karpaty Lviv, the Ukrainian side. Ex-Soviet Union, of course, beaten 1-0 by a late goal over there. Brilliant performance in Talca, went 3-0 up, Brian Mooney, Greg Costello, Tony Itzi, and they actually conceded another late goal, and for having dominated the tie, they had a very nervy couple of minutes, but went through 3-2 in aggregate. Unfortunately, met Panathinaikos, beaten 2-1 at home, 3-0 away. Sligo Rovers did knock out Floriana, 2-0 in the away leg, pulled back to 2-2, but did win at home. 1-0, John Brennan with the goal. Well beaten by Bruges, I think it was. Cork City again. CSK Kiev, not to be confused with the great Dynamo. But our last appearance in the Cup Winners' Cup was 1998-99. There were 2-0 in Cork. Unfortunately conceded in the 90th minute. Still won 2-1, but beaten 2-0 in Kiev in the return. But I mean, so that was basically 98-99 was the last season of the Cup Winners' Cup. It didn't see in the new millennium as UEFA revamped the competitions and brought the Cup Winners into the UEFA Cup, I think it was still called at the time. And they moved from just having the Champions League and the UEFA Cup. So the last final was played in Birmingham, actually, at Villa Park. And Lazio beat Mallorca from Spain. But it was one of those competitions that, I mean, I don't think any club ever retained the Cup Winners' Cup. And there were quite a few teams that actually got to the final. Even going back, actually the very first winners, if I remember correctly, Fiorentina, they got to the 62 final, lost to Atletico Madrid. Atletico Madrid got to the 63 final and were beaten by Tottenham Hotspur. And I did mention Magdeburg beating the holders Milan in 1974. Milan had beaten Leeds the year before. I think actually Ajax were beaten by Mechelen in the 1980s as holders as well. And I'm probably forgetting one or two cases, but certainly it was a competition that proved impossible to retain. But one of those, I suppose, quirky European tournaments, it threw up some great finals. And I remember one I watched on TV from 1981, because we talk about the old Iron Curtain. Dynamo Tbilisi from modern day Georgia, or the old Soviet Union, played Carl Zeiss Jena from what was then the East Germany, the German Democratic Republic, in Dusseldorf, and in front of a tiny crowd. I mean, the stadium was almost empty, and Tbilisi won 2-1. And I don't know, it's I think today, to look back and think hardly anyone went to that match, you'd think, you know, today it would be totally sold out. Mm-hmm. And but of course, for the fans of those teams, to get a visa was virtually impossible. And I mean, even if you go back to the likes of Magdeburg, I have a good friend who follows them today. He wasn't even born when they won it in 74, but they weren't. So they were a very talented team from a very good city, but they weren't a favorite. So if you go back to the old East Germany, the likes of Dynamo Berlin were the army team. They were the favorite team. It's probably for another podcast, but there were stories of them getting a lot of dubious refereeing decisions. But the fans of those clubs would find it much easier to be allowed a visa to go to the West because they could be sure they'd return. Mm. But maybe the fans of the likes of Magdeburg, Dynamo Dresden, etc., would not have been favoured by the regime at the time. And so not too many of their fans got to go to, I think it was Rotterdam that they beat Milan in that famous final.
It seems like
it was very hard.
You say it ended in... What 99 was it? Was the last cup final?
So yeah, 99 was the last one.
Yeah, it seems like that was the beginning of, I suppose, European football that we know now in the modern age. It's that streamlining of European football into kind of bite-sized competitions that we can all get a handle on, rather than, you know, a cup competition over here, a Fairs Trophy over here, and something else, a UEFA Cup here, and then the Champions League. So instead of having all these kind of different cup competitions swirling around at the same time, it's a pretty straightforward kind of you're in this, you go into a league format and then it's knockout, and that you can kind of progress up the ladder if you win that kind of competition as well to get yourself into the Champions League. Do you know all these kind of things? And it kind of, it's that streamlining that we kind of see with the cup going then in 99, isn't it?
Yeah, so I mean, the Cup Winners' Cup had always been a straight knockout. I mean, yeah, go back, I think the Champions League, if I remember correctly, came in 92-93 mm-hmm. season, when you had all this idea of group phases. And then you had, as the 90s went on, you had the idea, I'm pretty sure even in 92-93, it was just Leeds United who were the champions of England, Rangers who were the champions of Scotland. They famously met, of course, in the Champions League that season. But they actually introduced the group phases there. But I think it was actually in the later rounds that Rangers got to play in group stage football. But if you go on into the 90s, then you started allowing in a second team from the bigger leagues, and then it became four. Now it's even five, or potentially, I think it's six English clubs are in the Champions League this season.
Because of the coefficient, isn't it?
Yeah, well, the coefficient and the Tottenham winning the Europa League, etc. Yeah. But so the Cup Winners' Cup had always been a straight knockout. So as you say, UEFA streamlined the competitions from 99-2000, the Champions League. There were certainly group phases at the early rounds. I think they were in a couple of years before that. The UEFA Cup, as it was at the time as well, were taking in the cup winners as well. And obviously it's changed since then as well. But I suppose if you look back, there was the old magic of the knockout ties, some incredible draws, some teams you'd never get to see play otherwise, you'd probably never even get to hear of otherwise.
Never heard of them before.
And, now, but I mean, I'm also conscious of the fact, having talked through a lot of this podcast, financially, it wasn't very good for a lot of these clubs either. And I mean, Cork City would have lost a lot of money on CSKK, have even gone back. Games I mentioned, like Bowes losing money, etc., and even winning a tie, and you still end up losing money because you get the likes of a Slask Rocklov or Rovers getting Bannock Ostrava, having knocked out a Cypriot team who wouldn't have been cheap either. So the old format with no prize money was certainly not very good for the clubs, but certainly from a fan's point of view, I have happy memories of watching Limerick AZ Alkmaar. I got to see Galway play in the Cup Winners' Cup. I got to see Derry City play in the Cup Winners' Cup. Probably actually should mention Galway even in 91, their last time in Europe. They played in the Cup Winners' Cup as well, and played in Ballinderreen GAA grounds. Mm-hmm. They were well beaten by OB of Denmark, but they... probably an iconic game. I was living in Galway at the time, so I got to go to that game as well. But it was an iconic game. Not on the scoreboard. They were hammered, I think, 3-0, 5-0, whatever it was, home and away. Yeah.
As somebody who's kind of, I don't want to make you sound too old, but who's spanned quite a large period of Irish football. do you think it's kind of, do you think it's strange sometimes that we forget, because we're obviously not in this kind of modern era of social media and constant churn of video content and all that kind of stuff, that, you know, Galway did play European football, UCD did play European football, you know, Sligo Rovers did play European football. And so we forget, even it might have been the Cup Winners' Cup or whatever it was, but the team still played European football.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, UCD and Sligo Rovers have played quite recently in European football. But if you take, some of the provincial teams, like, there hasn't been European football in Galway since 1991. There hasn't been in Waterford since 1986. In Limerick, you got to go back to 1982. Finn Harps haven't played since the 1970s. It's 1978, I think, is the last time they were in Europe. And so for whole swathes of the country, there hasn't been European football on your doorstep for quite a long time. And these are really passionate football towns. I mean, when I was growing up, going to watch football in the early 70s, Waterford and Cork Kibbs were the two biggest teams. I mean, Shamrock Rovers might have been the glamour team, but they weren't that successful in the early 70s. But Waterford had won 6 leagues in 8 seasons. Hibs, they won a league. They won a couple of FAI Cups in a row. And to think that Waterford haven't been in Europe, Limerick haven't been in Europe since 1982. I mean, I can't believe that. I remember going to those games and thinking we'd be in Europe for forever, or certainly every other year, you know?
Yeah. How times have changed. Gary, as ever, thank you very much for joining us and bringing us on that fantastic journey of Irish clubs in the Cup Winners' Cup of Europe. And I know there's other competitions that we have yet to talk about with Irish clubs too, UEFA Cup, and the one that I'm most interested in talking about, which is the Fairs European Cup, to talk about that, to see what that was all about as well. But until next time, Gary, as ever, thank you very much.
Cheers. Thanks, Ken.
Well, that's it for this week's podcast and a look at League of Ireland clubs in the European Cup Winners' Cup. Don't forget to share the show on your own social media channels to let more people find out about the history and heritage of Irish football. Turn on notifications on whatever podcast platform you use so you get notified straight away when a new episode drops. And remember, support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League team. It's our heritage, it's our game. Bye for now.